أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
We were discussing Surah Al-Layl, chapter 92, and we discussed the first part of the surah, and just to recap part of what we said that the cause of revelation of the verse, according to many exegetes, was that a person in Medina had a palm tree either in his house with the branches in the house of the neighbor or in the house of the neighbor, which caused lots of trouble for him. And Prophet asked him to give it to him, give it to the Prophet, on the condition that the Prophet would give him a palm tree in paradise. And he did not accept. And someone overheard this conversation and asked the Prophet, if I buy that and give it to you, would that deal stand? And Prophet said yes, and he went and bought that palm tree for a garden or for 40 palm trees and gave it to the Prophet so that Prophet give it to the owner of the house, the poor person. And then these verses were revealed. It talks about فَأَمَّا مَنْ أَعْطَى وَاتَّقَى, for him who gives and is God-wary and confirms the best promise, we shall surely ease him into facility. وَأَمَّا مَنْ بَخَلَ وَاسْتَغْنَى, but as for him who is stingy and self-complacent and denies the best promise, we shall surely ease him into hardship. This was the first part of the surah. Now, the second part talks in more general terms. Verse number 12 onward, إِنَّ عَلَيْنَا لَلْهُدَى وَإِنَّ لَنَا لَلْآخِرَةَ وَالْأُولَى فَأَنْذَرْتُكُمْ نَارًا تَلَظَّى لَا يَسْلَاهَا إِلَّا الْأَشْقَى. Indeed with us rests guidance, and indeed to us belong the world and the hereafter. So I'll warn you of a blazing fire which none shall enter except the most wretched. About the verse, إِنَّ عَلَيْنَا لَلْهُدَى, guidance is our duty. If عَلَيْنَا, Allah usually means a duty, a right which someone has to discharge towards others. For example, if we say, لِي عَلَيْكَ حَقٌ, I have a right on you, it means that you have the duty to discharge my right, to discharge me the right that you have. And here Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is actually putting this duty upon himself, the duty of guidance. إِنَّ عَلَيْنَا لَلْهُدَى, guidance is our duty. Or as it is translated here, to indeed with us rests guidance. Now, what type of guidance is the duty of God? If it's guidance in a full-fledged guidance, that means that everyone should be guided. So we know that this is not the case. Allah of course guides, but not everyone is guided. That's why the exegetes say that Huda and Ihtida are two different things. Ihtida means to find the way. Huda is to show the way. So here Allah says showing the way is our duty, not finding the way for you. You have to find the way yourself. Khuda is upon us, ihtida is upon you. Ihtida is finding the way. Khuda is showing, hidayah is showing the way, ihtida is finding the way. So what is the duty of God? Is to show the way, not to make us find the way. That is something which is our own duty. However, here there is a discussion that in the Quran says that even finding the way could not be possible unless with the help of God. And we know this. Of course, this is the meaning of يهدي من يشاء ويذل من يشاء يذل به كثيرا ويهدي به كثيرا. He guides whoever he wishes, and he misguides whoever he wishes. So, is that not contradicting this? Here Allah says guidance in the sense of showing the way is our duty. In other words, it says that even finding the way, we have to choose who will find the way, who would not find the way. So, to solve this contradiction, which has been a polemical issue between different sects of Muslims since the beginning of Islam, and between all people of religion. Some people say that it's only by the help of God that people are guided, and He decides who to guide, who to misguide. And some say, no, of course this is not fair, because eventually He is going to reward and punish, and how is it possible that He decides who should be guided, and then He decides who should be punished? That means that everything is in His hand, and there is no room here for justice. Now, in Surah An-Nahl, there's a verse towards the beginning of Surah An-Nahl, which reads as such: وَعَلَى اللَّهِ قَصْدُ السَّبِيلِ. قَصْدُ السَّبِيلِ means the middle path, the path which leads to prosperity, to success. وَعَلَى اللَّهِ قَصْدُ السَّبِيلِ. Showing the path of success is duty of God. وَعَلَى اللَّهِ قَصْدُ السَّبِيلِ. وَمِنْهَا جَائِرٌ. However, some people, after having been shown this أَصْلُ السَّبِيلِ, this path towards success, would deviate from it. So here, وَمِنْهَا جَائِرٌ means that although God shows this middle path, the path towards success, still some people deviate from it. But why should God allow them to do this? Here, of course, the following statement mentions that this is the law, this is what, how Allah has created you. وَلَوْ شَاءَ لَهَدَاكُمْ أَجْمَعِينَ. Had He wished, He would have guided all of you. So, this second guidance is different from the first guidance. The second guidance is to help finding the way. The first guidance is showing the way. So when we talk about guidance, we have two types of guidance. One is showing the way, the other is helping to find the way. Now, showing the way is general. For everyone, Allah has shown the way. And this is done in different categories, different levels. One is what is called Al-Hidayah At-Takwiniyah, the guidance which is installed in our creation. Takwin is creation. When we say Al-Hidayah At-Takwiniyah, means a Hidayah which is installed in our being, in our creation, in the way we are created. And that is our fitra. Allah has put in us, our intellect, a sort of attraction towards Him, attraction towards spirituality. This is guidance. And also part of this Hidayat al-Takwiniyah is showing things in this world which lead us to Him, which lead us to God. And this is another type of Hidayah. There is a very beautiful verse in the Quran which inshallah I will discuss sometime later. The verse in verse number 18 of Surah Ali Imran, which says شَهِدَ اللَّهُ أَنَّهُ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا هُ. This is one of the sublime verses of the Quran. One of the verses which, just reciting it when you want to sleep, it has lots of rewards. شَهِدَ اللَّهُ أَنَّهُ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا هُ وَالْمَلَائِكَةُ وَأُولُو الْعِلْمِ قَائِمًا بِالْقِسْطِ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا هُ. Now, first it says God with bears witness that there is no God but Him. There is no إله nothing worthy of worship but him. شَهِدَ اللَّهَ أَنَّهُ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّهُ. And the angels bear witness, and those vested with knowledge, وَأُولُ الْعِلْمِ, also bear witness. So declare, لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّهُ الْعَزِيزُ الْحَكِيمُ. And in hadith we have that from the Prophet, peace be on him, anyone reciting this verse and afterwards saying, وَأَنَا عَلَىٰ ذَٰلِكُمْ مِنَ الشَّاهِدِينَ, and I bear witness as well, Allah would reward him such and such. The reward is so plenty. We don't want to mention it here. So, now, this شَهِدَ اللَّهُ, many exegetes, of course this may have different meanings, Allah himself bears witness for himself. How is it possible? Someone bearing witness for himself, that I bear witness that there is no knowledgeable person but myself. It is not possible. Others should bear witness. Isn't it? So here it says, Allah bears witness. Of course, there's a very deep meaning into this. We don't have time for it. But many exegetes have said that by his creation. You look around. You see the way he has created. You see the design. You see the beauty of creation, and this is how Allah bears witness for himself, that La ilaha illahu qa'iman bil qist. He is looking after everything with justice. Everything done in this world is according to justice. And if we go to those verses in Surah Nahl, if you could switch to Surah Nahl quickly, Surah number 16. Now, verse number 9 in Surah Nahl, وَعَلَى اللَّهِ قَصْدُ السَّبِيلِ وَمِنْهَا جَائِرٌ, with Allah rests guidance, and وَعَلَى اللَّهِ قَصْدُ, with Allah rests guidance to the straight path, and some of them are devious, and had he wished, he would have guided you all, وَلَوْ شَاءَ لَهَدَاكُمْ أَجْمَعِينَ. Then look at the following verses. It all talks about the way Allah has created the nature, the way He has sustained you. هُوَ الَّذِي أَنزَلَ مِنَ السَّمَاءِ مَاءً لَكُم مِّنْهُ شَرَابٌ وَمِنْهُ شَجَرٌ فِيهِ تُصِيمُونَ. It is He who has sent down water from the sky. From it you get your drink, and from it are sustained the plants, wherein you pasture your herds. With it he made the crops grow for you, and olive, date palms, vines. And it carries on saying many, many different things in this regard. And then it says, وَأَلْقَى, verse number 15, وَأَلْقَى فِي الْأَرْضِ رَوَاسِيَ أَن تَمِيدَ بِكُمْ. He cast in the earth firm mountains, lest it should shake with you. And the streams and ways, لَعَلَّكُمْ تَحْتَدُونَ, so that you may be guided. Now, so that you may be guided means through all these things, Allah is bearing witness to His unity and to Him being worthy of worship. So this is another type of showing the way. Huda. Therefore, as we said, Hidayah is Hidayah takwiniyah, Hidayah in creation. In your creation, there is something installed in you which is your fetra, which guides you towards God. In creation outside you, there are things you see, if they guide you towards God. And then we have Hidayah tashri'iyah, the guidance which comes through the book. Tashri', of course, means legislation. However, legislation is not probably a good translation for that. It means anything which is mentioned in the book as a guidance for you. This is Hidayah Tashri'iyah. Shara'a lakum min ad-deen. Shara'a means he opened a branch for you, because Sharia means a branch or a path which goes to the river, goes to the water, and we know water symbolically means knowledge, symbolically means life, and Sharia means a path towards true life, real life. And therefore, hidayah tashri'iyah means that he has opened a way to life, to the real life for you. And this is the book that Allah sends down, and through that he would guide. So, Allahu qassu sabil wa minha ja'ir. Allah has the duty to show the way to you, either through hidayah taqwiniyah or through hidayah tashri'iyah. However, even though there is this general hidayah, not everyone is let in, not everyone is guided. He guides anyone that he wishes. وَلَوْ شَاءَ لَهَدَاكُمْ أَجْمَعِينَ. Had he wished, he would have guided all of you. Therefore, showing the way is general. However, making someone to find the way is something else. Now, we know that we have to find the way ourselves. We have to find the way ourselves. And this is upon us. Showing the way is upon God. Finding the way is upon us. So that is hidayah, this is ihtida. However, in finding the way, Allah as well says that it is my decision who should find the way, who shouldn't find the way. وَلَوْ شَاءَ لَهَدَاكُمْ أَجْمَعِينَ وَلَوْ شَاءَ رَبُّكَ لَجَمَعَهُمْ عَلَى الْهُدَىٰ. If your Lord wished, he would have made all of them to come to guidance. فَلَا تَكُونَنَّ مِنَ الْجَاهِلِينَ وَلَوْ شَاءَ اللَّهُ لَجَمَعَهُمْ عَلَى الْهُدَىٰ. فَلَا تَكُونَنَّ مِنَ الْجَاهِلِينَ. Do not be from the ignorance thinking that, well, why didn't Allah do it? Well, if he wished, he would have done it. This is not the way he has created you. So, here come these verses. يَهْدِي مَنْ يَشَاءَ وَيُذَلُّ مَنْ يَشَاءَ. He wishes, he guides whoever he wishes, he misguides whoever he wishes. يُذَلُّ بِهِ كَثِيرًا وَيَهْدِي بِهِ كَثِيرًا. These are all in finding the way, personally, in every private decision of human beings and guidance, that is God who should decide who should come in, who should not come in. So, if this is the case, what's the use of this showing the general guidance to everyone? Why Allah says, "Inna alayna lal-huda," it's my duty to guide, it's my duty to show the way. So what's the use of it? If he decides who is permitted to come in, who is permitted to be guided, who is not. لَيْسَ عَلَيْكَ هُدَاهُمْ وَلَكِنَّ اللَّهَ يَهْدِي مَنْ يَشَاءُ. It's not your duty or your decision to guide them. Allah decides who should be guided. It means, again, the same thing. You only bring the guidance generally to everyone. You bring the book, you bring the revelation generally to everyone. So, it is your duty. However, your duty is not to guide them personally. It's my decision. وَلَكِنَّ اللَّهَ يَهْدِي مَنْ يَشَاءُ. إِنَّكَ لَا تَهْدِي مَنْ أَحْبَبْتَ. Not that anyone you like to be guided would be guided. Well, the Prophet liked, of course, people like Abu Lahab and others, his near kin, to be guided. But it's not his decision. He had only to show the way. So, here comes that crux of the puzzle, where all Muslim scholars have, during the centuries, argued against each other, one taking one side, the other side. It's Allah who decides, not human beings. But rationally, of course, if you want to talk sense and not be literalists, then of course we have to find ways. Even the Ash'aris, who were more inclined toward literalism, they had to find ways out of this puzzle. That if Allah decides who should be guided, then what is the purpose of punishment? What is the justice in punishment and reward? If it is who does all these things, well, some people say, well, whatever he does is right, we don't know, that's hikmah. We are ignorant, and therefore, yes, he guides anyone he wishes, and he rewards. He misguides anyone he wishes, and he punishes. That's his decision. We don't know. This is hikmah. This is mystery. And you know, religions are always, faith is always enveloped in mysteries. And it's a good thing to always say, it's a mystery. We don't know. But this is very, very sensitive issue. This is something which is related to our personal decisions and to our sense of justice. Now, the way the Shia Imams alayhim as-salam and the Shia theologians have explained this is that, yes, of course, it is God who decides who should be guided, but He decides on qualifications. This is the most important thing. When you want to be admitted to a university or to a job or whatever, it is the person, the authority in charge, who decides who should be admitted and who should not be admitted. However, they cannot decide precariously, otherwise they will be removed instantly. They decide on qualifications. Who's qualified to enter, who's not qualified to enter. And this is the decision of God on guidance, on making people to find the way. So when He says يُذَلُّ بِهِ كَثِيرًا, He makes them to not find the way, means that they are not qualified for this path. They are not suitable, they are not fit to come in, otherwise they would ruin everything. So they are kept at a bay, they are kept at a distance. Allah would not give His address to people that are not, do not deserve to find Him. And only those who are suitable for this, who qualify to find the way, to enter into this path of success, they are entered by God. They are made to enter by God, and this is His decision. And then He has said, what are the criteria? What criteria make, what are the criteria and what criteria make you to enter? For example, وَمَا يُذِلُّ بِهِ إِلَّا الْفَاسِقِينَ. If you are fasiq, you are not qualified to come in. Allah would not guide you. إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يَحْذِي مَنْ هُوَ كَاذِبٌ كَفَّارٌ. If you are a liar, not grateful to whatever is given to you, then you are not qualified to be guided. Allah would not allow you to come in. So we have to distinguish between two levels of guidance. One is showing the way, that's Huda, which Allah does for everyone. Inna alayna lal-Huda. And the Quran is a book for every person, for every individual. This is قُلْ يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسِ أَنِّي رَسُولُ اللَّهِ إِلَيْكُمْ جَمِيعًا. I am the messenger of God to every individual of you. This guidance is for all of you. So, in the level of showing the way, this hidayah is general for everyone. Now, but not everyone are qualified to find the way. It's Allah who decides which heart is qualified to receive the true guidance, to benefit from this. And this is why Allah says, on many hearts we put seal. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا سَوَاءٌ عَلَيْهِمْ أَأَنذَرْتَهُمْ أَمْ لَمْ تُنذِرْهُمْ. Those who reject, it's equal for them. You warn them, you do not warn them. لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ. Why لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ? Now here God actually attributes this to Himself. And this is very interesting. خَتَمَ اللَّهُ عَلَىٰ قُلُوبِهِمْ وَعَلَىٰ سَمْعِهِمْ. God has sealed their heart and their ears. وَعَلَىٰ أَبْصَارِهِمْ غِشَاوَةٌ. There is a curtain, there is a veil on their eyes. وَلَهُمْ عَذَابٌ عَظِيمٌ. And there is a big punishment for them. So, they are not qualified. Why? Because they have rejected. They decide to reject, then this guidance would not go to them. So, the puzzle is solved in, first of all, making this guidance a two-category guidance. One is the category of showing the way, and the other is the category of finding the way. Showing the way is general pleasure. Finding the way is only possible with Allah's leave. and he decides who's qualified, who's not qualified. It's not a precarious thing. It is based on certain rules, as all acts of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala are based on certain rules. So, inna alayna lal-huda, indeed with us rests guidance. Wa inna lana lal-akhirata wal-ula. Now here, what he wants to say that, why am I giving you all these things? Why am I giving all these kuffar, these instructions? Why am I concerned sending the best, the most honorable person in my creation to these people who do not understand anything, who reject, who swear at him, who annoy him, torture him? Why should I do this? Because I have the duty to guide. Inna alayna lal-huda. But don't think that I'm in need. That's why I call you. Wa inna lana lal-akhirata wal-ula. This world and the hereafter all belongs to me. So first of all, if I call you, it's not out of need. It's out of love. It's out of compassion. It's out of concern for you. And secondly, if you want anything in this world or in the hereafter, it all belongs to me. So come to me, you find it. So this inna lana lal akhirata wal ula has two aspects. One is that I'm not in need of any of you. It all belongs to me. And secondly, if you want anything and you think that going against me you find it, you are wrong. This world and next world both belongs to me. Inna alayna lal-huda wa inna lana lal-akhirata wal-ula. Indeed with us rests guidance. And indeed to us belong the world and the hereafter. فَأَنْذَرْتُكُمْ نَارًا تَلَظَّى. I warn you of a blazing fire. Now, when people go to hell, no, we don't go to hell, inshallah. When some people go to hell, we hope that no one goes to hell, but we know that this is what will happen. Some people will go to hell. Usually we think that it's only fire everywhere. Well, it's not. The way the hell is described is not that everywhere is fire. However, here it talks about a blazing fire. فَأَنْذَرْتُكُمْ نَارًا تَلَظَّى. I warn you of a blazing fire. لا يصلها إلا الأشقى. None shall enter except the most wretched. Now here the exegetes have elaborated on different discussions. What does this mean? لا يصلها إلا الأشقى. This means only the most wretched would enter hell. That means others would not enter hell. And who is the most wretched? Who is أشقى? Of course the verse afterwards itself explains who is the most wretched. الَّذِي كَذَّبَ وَتَوَلَّى. He who denies and turns back. كَذَّبَ means deny whatever you tell them. Deny God, deny hereafter. And turns his back towards whatever you bring for them. So this means only kuffar. And kuffar who not out of ignorance would deny or reject. Those who reject knowingly, those who turn their back, those who are careless about whatever you say, and these are very limited. What about those who are not kuffar, who believe, but who are wretched, who are sinners? Do they not enter hell? We know that they do enter hell, of course. Jews, Christians, Muslims, no matter what faith they have, if they are sinners, if they are real evildoers, by sinners we mean real evildoers, they will enter hell. Now, they may come out eventually, inshallah, but we know that the fasiqoon, as they call them, would enter hell. So, what's the meaning of this? La yaslaha illa al-ashqa, the most wretched only would enter that fire, that blazing fire, which rejects, denies, and turns his back. Now, usually the exegetes say that Only two sects in Islam say that the fasiq doesn't enter hell. Fasiq means someone who believes but who's a sinner. One are Khawarij. Why? Because they do not believe in fasiq. They say people are either mu'min or kafir. If you commit a sin, you are a kafir. So the verse says, yes, all kuffar would enter hell. So for them the question is solved, for Khawarij. The other people are the other side of the spectrum of belief, the Murji'a, who are 180% opposite the Khawarij. They also say the Fusaq would not enter hell. Not because they are kafir, because only kuffar would enter hell. No matter whatever sin you do, if you are a mu'min, if you are a believer, you do not enter hell. It's Murji'a. Now, of course, Murji'a and Khawarij are somehow marginal sects in Islam. We know that the main sects do not believe in this. Shia, Ash'arites, Mu'tazilites, they do not believe in such things. So, what is the solution for them? That's لا يفلح إلا الأشقى, only the most wretched. Now, they have made a very clever solution for this. And this is, that is the blazing fire. Blazing fire is one category of hell, which only the most wretched will enter. That's lava, which you have in other surah, kalla innaha lava. It is the blaze of fire. Nazza'atan lishawa, which peels off the skin of the head. تَدْءُ مَنْ أَدْبَرَ وَتَوَلَّى, the same thing. Anyone who turns back and runs away from us is caught by this lava. So this نَارًا تَلَظَّى is one category of hell, is one level of hell, one story of hell, because we know that hell has different stories, different levels. إِنَّ الْمُنَافِقِينَ فِي الدَّرْكِ الْأَسْفَلِ مِنَ النَّارِ. The lowest position is for hypocrites, those who show Islam but they are kuffar in their hearts. And then it comes higher and higher. So those who enter lava are, yes, la yaslaha illa al-ashqa alladhi kazzaba wa tawalla, the one who rejects and turns away. There's a report from Abu Huraira, from the Prophet, peace be on him, which is mentioned by many exegetes, both Sunni and Shia, they have mentioned this, because it's a beautiful hadith. It says that, Abu Hurairah says that, I heard from the Prophet that on the Day of Judgment, no one would enter hell, or, no, the other way. Everyone would enter paradise. On the Day of Judgment, everyone would enter paradise, except those who do not like to enter, who reject to enter. And he asked, would anyone reject to enter paradise? Everyone would enter paradise except those who reject to enter. Would anyone reject? He said, yes, this is the verse. Alladhi kazzaba wa tawalla, the one who turns away from God. And actually, this is true in a sense, because the one who turns away from God in this world will turn away from God in the next world. This is the way we create ourselves. And then we cannot go anywhere but to hell. Anyhow, فَأَنْذَرْتُكُمْ نَارًا تَلَظَّى لَا يَصْلَاهَا إِلَّا الْأَشْقَى الَّذِي كَذَّبَ وَتَوَلَّى. The other solution to this verse, one solution was that lava is one particular area of hell. The other is in the word salah. Salah means to be with something perpetually. So la yaslaha means to enter hell and to stay there perpetually. To be sort of a company forever, and that is only for the ashqa. Otherwise others would eventually find salvation. وَسَيُجَنَّبُهَا أثقى. And that whose God will shall be spared from it. الَّذِي يُؤْتِي مَالَهُ يَتَذَكَّى. He who gives his wealth to purify himself. Again here, أَشْقَى has come in the same form as أَشْقَى. أَشْقَى is superlative, means the most, righteous. And أَشْقَى is also the superlative, means the most pious. And again this problem comes, would only the most pious enter paradise, not anyone else? Again, the question would be, this atqa is the highest, the answer would be this atqa is the highest model for being kept away from hell and entering paradise. Otherwise, yes, others would come. This is the role model, the atqa. وَسَيُجَنَّبُهَا الْأَتْقَى الَّذِي يُؤْتِ مَالَهُ. He who gives his wealth to purify himself. Now here, of course, remember the story. The Atqa was the person who bought the palm tree, who dedicated it to the Prophet. He gave his wealth, he gave a garden to purify. Now, one very important lesson we learn from this is that giving one's property, one's money, for the sake of Allah would purify the soul. We usually think that purification of the soul comes through remembrance of God, saying Zikrullah, doing Salah, doing Fast. That's true. But there is one other thing which has a very, very strong, effective sort of bearing on this, and that is to give away what you have in for the sake of Allah. This would purify, and this is why zakat is called zakat, because it purifies. It purifies not only your belongings, your property, it purifies the soul as well. And this is what it says: يُؤْتِي مَالَهُ يَتَزَكَّى, gives whatever he has to become purified. وَمَا لِأَحَدٍ عِنْدَهُ مِنْ نِعْمَةٍ تُجْرَى, and does not expect any reward from anyone. Or, this is the way it's translated here, or there is nothing that he has to give anyone out of duty. Like the story that we had. That person did not owe anything to that person. He just went and bought that poultry and gave it to the Prophet to give it to him just to become purified. So وَمَا لَعَدٍ عِنْدَهُ مِنْ نِعْمَةٍ تُجْزَى إِلَّا بِتِقَاءَ وَجْهَ رَبِّهِ الْأَعْلَى وَلَسَوْفَ يَرْضَى. But to seek the pleasure of his Lord, here wajh means pleasure. Wajh in the Quran has many different meanings. Face, direction, pleasure, the very essence and being. So here he seeks only the pleasure of his Lord, the most exalted. وَلَا سَوْفَ يَرْضَى, and surely soon he will be well pleased. Because he seeks the pleasure of the world, of the God, he will be pleased. Now one only small point I want to mention here, which is not very important, but it's interesting. And that is usually some Sunni exegetes, I have seen this in Asyuti, in Al-Ithqan, and also Fakhruddin Razi and some others, they mention that this Atqa is Abu Bakr. And Atqa is the most pious. Why? Because they say the most pious person after the Prophet is Abu Bakr. And then they say that the story, although of course all historians of the Quran have mentioned that the cause of revelation for this was the story of Abu Dahdah, where he bought that palm tree for a garden and gave it to the Prophet. However, some say that it may probably be related to the story of Abu Bakr buying Bilal and freeing him, because Bilal, you know, was under very strong torture, atrocious sort of torture, and Abu Bakr bought him and freed him for the Prophet, peace be on him. And that's why الَّذِي يُؤْتِي مَالَهُ يَتَزَكَى gives his money to become purified. And therefore our Afqa is Abu Bakr. Now Fakhruddin al-Razi in his tafsir, he says that Sunnis say that this Al-Afqa is Abu Bakr. Shias say that this Afqa is Ali ibn Abi Talib. Although I haven't seen it in any Shia exegesis, maybe it was a discussion going on at that time between him and Ismaili, especially because, you know, Fakhruddin al-Razi had a very close relation in terms of dialogue and discussion and argument with Ismailis. And maybe this was something going on in that environment, that is Al-Atqa is Ali ibn Abi Talib. And he says that it is unanimous among all Muslims, Shia and Sunni, that is Al-Atqa is either Abu Bakr or Ali. No one out of them. I don't know why he says this, because of course this is very general. And the story is related to Abu Dahda rather than to any of these two personalities. However, he has actually created this discussion in his tafsir. He says that the Sunnis and Shias unanimously all Muslims are unanimous. That this is either Ali or Abu Bakr. Nothing, no one out of this. And then he says, it cannot be Ali, although Shia say it's Ali, and he brings the reasons, the argument for Shias. He says that because, of course, in other places, Ali is mentioned with the same qualities. Like, for example, إِنَّمَا وَلِيُّكُمُ اللَّهُ وَرَسُولُهُ وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا الَّذِينَ يُقِيمُونَ الصَّلَاةَ وَيُؤْتُونَ الزَّكَاةَ وَهُمْ رَاكِعُونَ. This zakat again is mentioned for purification, for Ali, peace be on him. He says, although this is the case, and we have other verses in the Quran, but it cannot be Ali. It should be Abu Bakr. Why? Because here it says, وَمَا لِأَحَدٍ عِنْدَهُ مِنْ نِعْمَةٍ تُجْزَى. He does not owe anything to anyone. He just gives it for the sake of God. And we know that Ali owed a lot to the Prophet, because Prophet adopted him, he trained him, he was grown up in the house of the Prophet, so he owes a lot to the Prophet. But Abu Bakr doesn't owe anything to the Prophet. And therefore, وَمَا لَأَحَدٍ عِنْدَهُ مِنْ نِعْمَةٍ تُجْزَى fits Abu Bakr more than Ali. Now, of course, we know that this is a very weak discussion and argument. It's not important now to say this Afqa is this very general. However, what sort of ni'mah is greater than the ni'mah of guidance and Islam? And the Prophet brought it to everyone. Now, who is more indebted to the Prophet, Abu Bakr or Ali? Because Ali never worshipped idols. And Abu Bakr used to worship idols. And he was guided by the Prophet. So he owes the Prophet more than Ali owes the Prophet, if you want to go into that discussion. So it's a futile discussion, it's a polemical discussion. And therefore, I just mentioned it to somehow give you some different sort of argument. Sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alayhi.
You mentioned a lot about finding the way. What does that mean? How does that come across? Is it an individual private thing? Is it a public thing? Is it a community thing? How does it work?
Yes, it is individual. It is private. It means that in every person's heart, there should be a place for this guidance. There is a place, however, we have to open the way for it. And therefore it is absolutely a private individual decision to make, so that one would become qualified to receive that guidance. Well, the guidance is everywhere, but to receive it, it's just like the transmission of waves in the air. It's everywhere, but you need a receiver to receive it. And here guidance is everywhere. Allah has guided everyone through different levels of creation, inside you, outside you, through revelation. This guidance is there. One has to make his heart receptive for it. And the only thing which would obstruct the way for it are sins, are turning away from God, are turning towards this world full-heartedly. These are the things which would obstruct the way and will become the barrier. Otherwise, every person should be able to find the way.
Just to add to this question is, are we talking here about religious and belief guidance, or generally, for example, nowadays in your business, Allah will show me, but then how to find a way isn't up to me. That's also so.
Well, that's a different issue. That's you are making things very complicated now. Yes, you know, when Allah wants to give rizq to someone, of course He would certainly make the things in an order so that he can find that rizq. And of course, to be qualified to get that rizq rests on certain things. One of them is to move and to plan and to do things that we usually do in business. There are other things as well, though, which of course are decided by God on individual basis. But it should be something very similar to general guidance.
Thank you. I just before you come to the sorry, I did something
I guess I'd ask, does this happen in stages? So is it possible to be shown the way, but not have Allah's guidance in finding the way?
Yes, of course. That's what's always happened.
That Allah has shown the way to everyone. Now, sometimes He may not have shown it through a book. Like, for example, many people who have not received the book, who live in faraway places, but He has shown the way in other ways, in the creation outside. So He does not, of course, expect them to do salat and fast the way we do, because we are guided, but He expects things from them through the guidance in their creation. Allah, therefore, has shown the way to everyone. However, finding the way is something that happens individually, on the basis of our qualifications. So sometimes the way is shown, finding the way is not possible for us. And sometimes finding the way is very easy because of what is shown to us.
So those who have not been given a book, or like you think, then they will not have that help in actually finding the way.
They have the help in other categories.
Yes.
In finding the way. Yes, they have,
They have.
Yes, of course. Depending on their personal and private attitudes, Allah will help them, of course. They are His creatures as well.
Yeah.
And He loves them the way He loves everyone. And therefore, the only thing is that their judgment, their path will be different from ours, certainly.
Okay, so it's, was it Hidayah Sharia or something? So although it translates guidance through the book, it can't literally read the book.
Hidayah Sharia is what comes through revelation.
Revelation.
Okay, which we call the book. Okay. Some people don't have Hidayah Sharia, but they have Hidayah Takwiniya. They have Hidayah in their creation. and Allah will judge them according to that hidayah and that guidance, not according to hidayah al-Shari'ah. Clear?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
It makes one wonder what happens to the generations of secular societies and the children who are born after a secular society become totally secular because they don't believe in God. In fact, they make fun of God and they have got, it's gone into their culture, the secular ideology, and they reject God. So what happens to the youngsters growing up in such a society? How did they get the
Bible? This is not something new. I mean, in old societies, if you look at the conversation of prophets with their nations, you would see that they were quite secular in the sense. And they said, whatever you say about the hereafter, these things are just the stories of the past people. They don't believe in it. And even if they worship idols, they worship it not on the basis of the idea of hereafter or something like that. It just is on the idea that this is a sort of business. We do something for them, they do something for us. So, this is not something new. We always have had this. And in certain cases, when a prophet went to a people, to a nation, they rejected, almost all of them rejected, they were destroyed. And therefore, if we see the secular society today, which in my view is not as bad as those societies, at least there are some certain rational discussions going on here in our modern-day secular society, which were not existing in the old days. And therefore, the dialogue and discussion was not possible. It was just a clash and confrontation. Now, of course, it's different. And as I said, Allah has guided everyone in their nature. And that's why you see even in one family, two brothers or brothers and sisters, they are different. One of them believes, one of them does not believe. It is something which goes back to every individual. And in secular society as well, of course, we have many people who go astray. However, we have many people who find their way as well. Therefore, I think this has been the way all through the history. It's not something very new. It's a modern way of rejecting God. Otherwise, at all times people have rejected and people have accepted.
Okay, in the beginning you mentioned this desire in two ways. One is Khuda and the other is Sekta. Khuda is showing the way generally to everybody.
Helping to find a way.
Helping to find a way, particularly. Now, there is this as Khudalil Muttaqin. This Khudalil Muttaqin, is this part of the Khuda or?
This is the Ihtida, actually. Khudalil Muttaqin means only Muttaqin can find their way through this. Otherwise, it's Khuda for everyone, isn't it? It has come generally. It hasn't come only for Muttaqin. But it is Muttaqin only who can use it. And therefore, on their side, Muttaqin have the capacity and qualifications to use this hidayah. And therefore, this is Ihtida on their side. This is Khuda on the side of Allah. But it is only useful for those who can find the way through this, who are muttaqin. So we shouldn't be very sensitive about the word Khuda or Ihtida. We have to see, of course, the context and then classify the things according to these two categories.
Is this tension in the end that we have to read into the word and see what it means from the word itself, but not be specific about the word Khuda, for example?
Yes, that's right. I mean, when we say Khudan lil Muttaqin, it means it is guidance, okay? But it's only guidance for those who find the way through it, of course. That's Muttaqin. It's like, for example, saying that the university is there for anyone who wants to go and study. But of course, only those who qualify, who have finished their secondary school A level, and then they have certain master's. University is there for everyone, but only for those who qualify for it. Of course.
Thank you, Muhammad.
Sheikh, everywhere in the Quran is mentioned, and you mentioned several times that Allah guides who He wishes, and you use the word and you decide who He misguides. I'm just trying to understand the word misguide. Is it actually the word misguide, or He does not guide? And also, for example, you say He makes them not find a way. You emphasize the word not.
Yes.
Rather than
because in some places it is not guiding. For example, إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يَحْدِي لَا يَحْدِي الْقَوْمَ الظَّالِمِينَ. Okay. The oppressors Allah would not guide. Or إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يَحْدِي مَنْ هُوَ مُسْهَرْفٌ مُرْسَامٌ. Allah would not guide those who are excessive in their transgression and always doubt. However, in some places He uses the word misguide, that yurillu, from dalala. Dalala is to make someone go astray. Dalala is astray. Izlal is to make someone to go astray. And that is of course stronger. That is stronger than not guiding. But both of them have the same meaning, of course, when it comes from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Because when Allah does not guide someone, they go astray. That's said.
So again, you use the other one, Khatm Allah wala qulubihim.
Mm-hmm.
So when He seals the heart. So once He has sealed the heart, you know, He basically says, I'm not going to guide you anymore. Because
that's
they feel the heart.
That's right.
Is there any way that things can be reversed for those people?
Yes, of course. Things could be reversed. The seal could be broken. But it would be very difficult. After it is sealed, it would be very difficult. And it's not sealed by a couple of sins or a couple of transgressions or these things. It is sealed after long rejection. After this rejection has become the habit of some person, some people, then of course the seal will come. And in a sense, this is some sort of figurative, saying that there is no hope for these people anymore. It's not possible.
Yeah, just to continue the discussion, if I may. So for example, when you say Nahrul Kubra, right, there's a big fire there, so there's a small fire in this world. So are those the people who are experiencing the small fire in this world, and how is it represented, the small fire? Is there any example?
Yes, of course. I mean, people who believe but they are sinners, they are in a small fire, in your words. People who do not rely on God, they are in torment and torture all the way, all the time. People who rely on other things than God, they are somehow fragmented. And what we see in the hereafter is actually another stage or another manifestation of the type of personality that we have in this world. Therefore, whatever is there is just a different manifestation of us in a different world. And therefore, yes, of course, whatever we experience there, we already experience it. And this is probably the meaning of the verse about paradise. كُلَّمَا رُزِقُوا in Surah Baqarah. كُلَّمَا رُزِقُوا مِنْهَا مِنْ ثَمَرَةٍ رِزْقًا قَالُوا هَذَا الَّذِي رُزِقْنَا مِنْ قَبْلَ. Whenever they are given something, they say, well, this is what we were given before. وَأُتُوا بِهِ مُتَشَابَ. It's something similar. There is something similar.
Thank you,
sister. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Please excuse me if this sounds a bit immature. I teach in another school, and I come in contact with this students who are in the 12th, 13th, 16th year. And one of my topics, one of my duties is to have what we call the personal social health, moral studies time. Now, what bugs us, this is where we have an argument, what bugs us is this concept that Allah will guide those whom He pleases and He shuts off. That sometimes bugs us with His just, His other. Because if Allah wants to, He can condition the heart or the mind of His beings such that He will never go astray. Now this might, you might think that what is the use of time then? If Allah could have tested, you might say this is a way of testing us because we are here to be tested. But Allah could test us a bit less severely so that we have a very peaceful existence in this world, where we don't have all these tyrants. Now this is what we come across with students. So how could I convince these sort of minds? He said, look, we have to accept all and He will shut up. Where is the justice in that? You know, you understand what I'm
saying? Yes, of course. This is not your problem, of course. It's a problem during the history, not only through Islam, in throughout the whole history of religion. You see, our concepts or our perception of human being is that Allah can program in whichever way He wishes every person, while He is telling us that no, I have given you more than what you think, more freedom than you can imagine. I do not program, I just assist, I just help. Okay? And if you do not want, just like Shaitan, you see, Allah had given him everything, but He had not programmed him. And therefore he can could come out with his innermost personal feeling and what he was attracted to, and to say those things to God. And this is not exactly the position of human being. The position of human being is even above this, in terms of the freedom that Allah has given us. Now you may say, what's the use of this freedom? Because this freedom would eventually lead us to hell, isn't it?
Yes.
Now, the use of it will come clear when we go to paradise. Not to hell. It's not very useful in hell, although we have it in hell as well. But not when we go to paradise, you can then realize what is the use of this huge freedom that Allah has given you. You become a king for yourself. And without this, human being would have been just a very limited creature. He wants to give us everything that He has. That's what I mentioned before, that He wants to share with us what He has. And one of the things which He has is this absolute freedom of will. And this is what He has given to us. So although here we may see this to be a liability rather than a good thing, when we go to the ultimate destination, we will see that without this, we couldn't have it.
So there is a concept of
faith that we will only realize this when we go to, which we will not think, obviously. That faith should be there.
Yes.
But you understand there are people who don't have that faith, who don't believe in that unseen.
So if they don't believe in that, it's not in them. Now, if they do not believe in that, then what's the use of discussing Allah's treatment and whether He has given us freedom, not freedom, if they don't have faith? So it's all based on faith, certainly. And when we discuss these things with people, we assume that we are discussing on a certain platform, a certain basis. And otherwise, of course, we cannot discuss. Certainly.
Thank you, Shaykh. This is before coming back to brothers. This is for the last short lesson. Thank you.
One of the hadith you mentioned was quoted from Abu Huraira.
Mm-hmm.
He's not exactly the most reliable source. I'm wondering why.
But not everything coming from Abu Huraira is wrong, of course. So you know that many, many traditions have come from Abu Huraira, and we cannot just reject a tradition on the basis that it has come from Abu Huraira. But yes, according to Shi'i understanding, Abu Huraira is not a reliable muhaddith, like many other muhaddiths who are not reliable. But we do not totally reject what they say. And especially in issues which are related to faith and belief and creed, into kalam, so to speak, we do not wholeheartedly subscribe to any hadith. We just mention them if they are supported by a verse of the Quran, by reason or something like that.
Okay, I think Brother Munsa wants to get something to the discussion of Raza, and then we have a last one from them, we'll be done with it. Thank you.
You know, you mentioned in the end that when we have a discussion like this, the question which Munsa asked, that it is in the context of the religion, and we discuss in that framework. If we, then if we can discuss the same thing outside the framework of the religion or the faith, if you say that just as a human being, if freedom is not there, then the potential of the growth will be restricted. Can we discuss it in that sort of framework, that this freedom is necessary for the growth of the human being as such?
Yes, of course, but here the question was why God does give us this much freedom to lead us to hell. So we are actually discussing in the context of religion. If we want to discuss outside the context of religion, yes, of course, many different types of arguments can come in. And then whether we have free will or we don't have free will, that the whole discussion would be shifted to a different level and different area, rather than talking about God. Here, you know, the problem with religious people is that they put all responsibility on God's shoulders. Everything we do, it is God who is the culprit, na'udhu billah, all that. So this is the way in religion we discuss things. But when we want to discuss things outside religion, then of course the type of arguments would differ.
But according to Islam, there is no distinction between religion and faith. Inside religion and outside religion, everything.
You say according to Islam, therefore you are talking inside religion. Yes, the sign is if you follow one major prophet sincerely, you have found the right path. Of course, the right path, we have different paths which are different versions of the same path. That's Sirat al-Mustaqim. That's Islam. But then we have now different versions because of the history and all these things. However, we cannot say that it's absolutely leading to wrong destination. And this is why the Quran always mentions مُصَدِّقًا لِمَا بَيْنَ يَدَيْهِ. It confirms the existing book. Because لِمَا بَيْنَ يَدَيْهِ is different from مَا خَلْفَهُ, what went before it. What went before it? Of course, the true Torah, the true Injil, we don't have them, and the Quran is absolutely 100% like them. There's no difference in terms of guidance. However, what the Quran mentions is confirms the existing book. مُصَدِّقًا لِمَا بَيْنَ يَدَيْهِ مِنَ الْكِتَابِ, whatever book exists in its presence. لِمَا بَيْنَ يَدَيْهِ in its presence. Whatever in its presence, the existing Torah, the existing Injil, at the time of the Prophet, it confirmed it. وَمُهَيْمِنًا عَلَيْهِ, and was a benchmark. If anything differed, then of course it showed that this is deviation, you have to put it aside. However, we know that the core of the Bible, the core of the Torah, the core of the Injil, which is worshipping God, which is being humble to Him, which is believed in hereafter, is confirmed by the Quran. Therefore, yes, if we follow one of these big personalities, And of course, in our view, this is the Muhaymin, the book which is the benchmark over other books. And if we find our way towards this, it is the best one. If we sincerely follow this, then of course we are rightly guided. Now, then it depends how strong we are in our faith, how faithful we are to our convictions and all these things, how deep we want to go into this. Otherwise, the prophets of God are these signposts of guidance. I don't know whether this addresses your question or you meant something else. Inshallah, when we go to the next world, we find out. That's why the being on the straight path, keeping on the straight path, is always something which one has to very carefully look after and use reason, the book, other things to find out constantly whether we are continuing on the right path or we are not continuing on the right path. It is something which should be the concern of every individual every day and every month, and this is why people are rewarded for that, trying to keep on the right path.
Sheikh, you know, my reality has been prompted by the discussion.
Sorry,
it's a very simple calculation from having years on how these seem to go ahead. And the one which is, say, 72 Farkan, only one is going to go into Jannat. Amongst the Muslims, there will be 72 and there is only one which will go to Jannat. Do you think that was prompted by somebody who wanted people not to deviate? Or was it particularly coined, this hadith might have been coined to keep the Kharij, as he said, away from from the mainstream of Islam?
I don't know, this hadith is not helpful at all. As I said before, this hadith is not accepted by our ulama, our scholars, because it's not helpful, because everyone thinks that he is the one sect who would go to paradise and others would go to hell. Therefore, it doesn't help at all for the path of guidance.
Okay, thank you, Sheikh.